Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Governor Gavin Newsom kicked off this year's Asian and Pacific Islander Heritage Month with a new resource, launching a statewide hotline to report hate crimes. The goal is to create a safe space that allows people to make an anonymous report and be connected to services, as well as the option of law enforcement with the victim's consent. This comes as the state reports that the most recent data shows hate crimes have jumped 33% from 2020 to 2021, reaching their highest levels in two decades. Hate crimes span race, ethnicity, religion, gender, and sexual orientation. But since the start of the pandemic, Asian Americans have shouldered a brunt of disinformation, violent attacks caught on camera, as well as sparking a larger conversation about mental health following two mass shootings within the AAPI community in California at the start of the year. A national survey this year from the Asian American Foundation found that one in two Asian Americans report feeling unsafe in the U.S. due to their race or ethnicity. We're going to get a better understanding of how these numbers and how this data touches many parts of life. Sarah Mises-Tan is CAP Radio's race and equity reporter and the host of the podcast Mid-Pacific, which explores Asian American identity in California. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning, Vicky.
Okay, so we'll get to the new statewide hotline in just a moment. But first, I mean, Sarah, you're coming off the heels of a podcast that really dives into Asian American identity through food, family, politics, music, so much more. Now, although you didn't specifically touch upon this specific issue that we're going to be talking about, but throughout your conversations with Asian Americans across the state, did you get a better sense of how the past 3 years have impacted their sense of identity and sense of belonging in the United States?
Absolutely. I think the Asian American Foundation survey is right on the mark. The sense that I've gotten from folks I spoke with for the podcast is that many feel like we're in this period of maybe increased animosity against people who appear to be of East Asian descent, I'll be specific. And this is for a lot of reasons, but I definitely think that with this feeling comes some pressure to prove that you belong here in the U.S., something that is always an undercurrent of Asian American identity generally, but maybe more front and center right now. I think the result of these attacks has been that some Asian Americans are really leaning into that belonging idea, so really trying to prove that they are from here, that they are American. And on the other hand, I think that you see other Asian Americans wanting to distance themselves from being American, embracing their ancestry a little more, learning more about their background, and maybe wanting to identify more with that instead of the American side of them. So you see people on two ends.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's so individual. I mean, the past few years can just feel like a blur, right? So much has happened since the attacks initially on Asian Americans began during the pandemic. But with the lens of a journalist and also the benefit of hindsight, how do you reflect on these hate crimes that took place against the AAPI community? And potentially what was already set into motion pre-2020 that might have set the stage for all of this?
So I think, unfortunately, many of the sentiments behind the hate crimes that we've seen in the recent years, they're just an upwelling of feelings that I think have long been simmering under the surface and that have just manifested in different ways in the past. I think that the hate crimes are just an extension of some of those like unsavory stereotypes about Asian Americans that, you know, as Americans, we've all kind of gotten used to do a little bit. These stereotypes were often left off in the past. I absolutely think that with the election of our former president and rhetoric around centering America and America first, the natural enemy of that kind of rhetoric does tend to be China. And this also amplified a lot of that tension. I think all of that to say, in some ways, the attacks that happened maybe gave a moment for us to actually acknowledge that these stereotypes and misconceptions about Asian Americans had been happening for so long. Whereas before, I feel like we didn't really have a way to talk about them. There was no tangible way to address them. A lot of Asian Americans kind of just maybe laughed it off or rolled it off or said, there's nothing really we can do about it right now. Mm-hmm. So positives and negatives.
Right. And also from your podcast, I mean, right from the get-go, we learned that Asian American is just this gigantic umbrella term for many countries, cultures, and immigration journeys. And that can be applied to a lot of immigration journeys that aren't even Asian American, right? There's so many countries that are part of these broad terms. But are these broad, important differentiations within this umbrella, are they reflected when we're talking about disinformation and hate crimes?
Oh, yeah. Great question. Obviously, yes. I don't think that people who are stereotyping or thinking about who these hate crimes are happening to are really making this distinction that Asian American is, like you said, very broad and diverse term. And I think that's, of course, the root of the problem right there. In a way, it has been a term that's been unifying for the Asian American diaspora, just because suddenly we're all being othered in a similar way and there can be some strength in coming together. But yeah, on the other hand, I think it can be extremely flattening to assume there is no nuance in the Asian American experience. I know there's also a lot of question from South Asians, just where they fit in with the term Asian American. They have also experienced hate crimes, but in a different way. And so in some ways, I also worry about just this kind of flattening the conversation and obscuring hate crimes that are happening in other parts of the Asian American community that may not come to mind just because they're not that immediate image of an Asian American that you might think of.
Yeah, given that this is an ongoing situation and conversation, how has your view of hate crimes against the AAPI community evolved today?
You know, like I said, I think that it's an expanded definition of hate crimes against Asian Americans. I think people maybe are quick to jump to like a certain image of like who is being hate crimed, I guess, when you think about hate crimes against Asian Americans. But yeah, through kind of covering this, I think I've come to realize, and a lot of people have pointed out to me, like, yes, of course, like Sikh Americans have been experiencing hate crimes since 9/11, just because of some of, you know, the turban that they wear and the way they look and the way that they're stereotyped. They are also technically Asian Americans under this term, but we don't often think of that as being part of this kind of continuum of hate crimes that's been happening. I kind of like, you know, it kind of drives home that point that maybe we kind of touched on mid-Pacific, which is that I would like for there to be more unity within the term Asian American. I know it's tough because there are so many differences, but if we could kind of see those common threads, I think there could be strength. Like maybe we could have seen like, oh yeah, this is happening to some of our Asian American brothers and sisters over here. It could also happen here. And, you know, I think I was speaking with former Senator Dr. Richard Pan recently, who just mentioned that, you know, overall, I think a lot of the things that happen in terms of hate crimes against Asian Americans tend to have roots internationally. And that, you know, it's almost irrelevant to what people, Asian American people, are doing here in this country. They're two separate things, I guess is what I'm trying to say. International relations with Asian countries are different from Asian American people who live here. Here's Senator Pan saying it much better than me.
Sometimes I think we do need to distinguish. There are things that are Asian and there are things that are Asian American. They're not the same, right? So, you know, because, I mean, so sometimes people, they talk about Asian American, they're really talking about Asian. And sometimes there are things that are uniquely Asian American. They're not really Asian. They're usually American.
Right. I mean, that's an important distinction that often gets lost, you know, when you're talking about stereotyping, right? I mean, because that's kind of the antithesis, is you're not making these distinctions. So when it comes to this new resource that the state just announced last week, California is, you know, this is in the spirit of the state making its own strides to combat the rise in hate crimes, not just for Asian Americans, but all Californians. The governor's administration has been promising a hotline for reporting hate crimes. Now we have it. So how does it work?
Sure. So the number, if you're looking for it, is 833-8-NO-HATE. And callers can receive assistance in over 200 languages, which is great. Essentially, though, I don't want to mislead people. And I don't know if the governor is trying to with this hotline either. It's just supposed to be a tool in the toolbox. But essentially, they are just trying to collect. They're trying to have a central place to collect data about hate crimes against Asian Americans that are happening within California. Right now, there isn't really a governmental body that's collecting that information. So it's important to keep that goal in mind, to know that this is not, I mean, I think they will help connect you to mental health resources if you call, but this is not a therapy hotline in any way. And this is not an action hotline in any way. So really what you're doing when you call this hotline is you're reporting something for the state to put down in their records. So they can have a running tally and have this data collected over many years, but it's really not an actionable place. So, you know, I get that when a hate crime happens, the victim kind of is looking for solutions. And unfortunately, this hotline is not going to provide that, I think, or not directly anyways.
Right. I mean, it said on the website that they're going to be, you know, there's potentially mental health resources and they can involve law enforcement with the consent of the person who's reporting this crime. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think it's supposed to add to the attorney general's office in the state. They do track hate crimes, but their most recent data is from 2021. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's not as we don't really know what it looks like in the last 2 years. So this will hopefully be, you know, kind of a more accurate reflection. This is obviously all in its infancy and with things that are in its infancy, it's going to grow. What do you think the potential challenges and its growing pains could actually be?
Yeah. So when I spoke with members of, I guess, there are some advisors who have been a part of this hotline creation, and I think a lot of them felt that the biggest challenges were going to be reaching those people who are most vulnerable to the hate crimes happening. So within the AAPI community, that does tend to be an older population that is not as tech savvy. They also tend to be a population that may not be comfortable speaking English as their first language. And they also tend to be a population that culturally is probably looking to just kind of keep their head down, blend in, be quiet. They're probably an older population as well. And so I think the challenge just comes with reaching that group, which is just always going to be hard to reach. So reaching them in language in a culturally competent way, and also kind of talking to them about why it would be important to call this hotline and report this when, you know, the immediate result of doing so may not be super obvious in the immediacy.
Yeah. So the state is obviously trying to increase outreach and awareness, but it's not only California, right? I mean, this also comes nationally as there's been some ground gained in terms of acceptance of Asian Americans. We just had a conversation with you, Kristen, and Janelle, who are also CAP Radio reporters, about just the strides in mainstream pop culture. But also there's positive relations with Asian countries as well. For example, President Biden recently hosted a White House dinner with the president of South Korea. How do you think these international embraces can shape the way Asians and Asian Americans are perceived?
Yeah, you know, on the one hand, in that like broad sense that Asian Americans are kind of stereotyped and Americans have an image of what an Asian American is, I hope that seeing something like the White House dinner with the president of Korea kind of, or South Korea, really kind of shows that there are better relations with people who look like they're of East Asian descent. But yeah, at the same time, like we talked about, Asian American is a huge term. Not everybody who is Asian American is South Korean. I think that, like, even within the Korean diaspora in America, I think you'll find more favorable kind of relations with America. Like, I'm partly Korean, and I can say my family kind of has a really positive image of America just because of the way the Korean War was and that kind of legacy and history there. So you could say, on the one hand, maybe this didn't change anything. Maybe Korean Americans were more primed to be kind of pro-America anyways because of the legacy of America in South Korea. On the other hand, maybe it's a good thing for white Americans to see the White House embracing an Asian American or an Asian culture. Mm. So,
you know, dipping into politics a little bit. I mean, we obviously have a presidential election that's quickly approaching next year. I mean, President Biden intends to run for re-election, but that doesn't mean that in the meantime, other names aren't being floated around. In the spirit of this conversation, I mean, particularly there's two Asian Americans, both women. I mean, of course, we have Vice President Kamala Harris, and we also have former Ambassador Nikki Haley. Both are the first South Asian Americans for their respective offices. So how do these high-profile officials who are, you know, kind of breaking ground, creating milestones in history, how do they fit into this broader conversation?
Yeah, I think these two candidates really represent a first step and a growing trend. I spoke with a demographer, Karthik Ramakrishnan, who's also a political scientist based at UC Riverside. He said that he actually thinks that we're going to start seeing more of this.
You know, if you think about it, there aren't too many second-generation Asian Americans that are above the age of 50. And why is that? Well, we had very restrictive immigration laws until 1965. You didn't see large-scale Asian immigration really pick up until the 1970s. And so the children of immigrants who came here in the 1970s are, you know, in their late 40s, maybe starting to approach 50 years old. So you're going to see a lot more Asian American candidates. So you have that kind of demographic wave that's rising.
Hmm. Well, finally, obviously, optics are huge in politics, you know, regardless of race, ethnicity, or gender. How do views of Asian Americans in this country ultimately shape the way that AAPI politicians have to present themselves to the public?
Oh, yeah. So I think because they are a relatively new demographic of candidate that's running for political office, I think that we've seen a lot of motion in our state, in California. I think we've seen less motion on the national stage, or once you get to those bigger political stages where maybe there is less familiarity with what an Asian American candidate is or the Asian American experience. Karthik says it better than me again, so we're going to hear he is again.
In California, you know, we've had many Asian American candidates who've been successful in local office, in congressional office, in statewide office. So I think it's important for us, especially in California, to recognize that. What we find is that unlike for many Latino and Black candidates, Asian Americans have to win in districts that are not majority Asian. And so they have to be bridge building from the beginning.
I think Asian American candidates in larger scale races where they're trying to win those non-Asian districts that Karthik mentioned, they're facing a lot of those larger stereotypes that we spoke about earlier. So this perceived foreignness coupled with stereotypes like that they're quiet, they're too quiet, they're just hard workers, they're kind of meek, they're not good upper management material, as people say. So that's that so-called bamboo ceiling that all Asian Americans face. Karthik mentioned, interestingly, former state treasurer and gubernatorial candidate in 2017, John Chung, who ran against Gavin Newsom and lost. And obviously, I think there are many reasons around that. But Karthik himself mentioned that whether or not this is real or not, Chung was just not perceived as being charismatic enough for a job, for that job. And I think that is a great example of some of those barriers that Asian Americans face when they're trying to run on a bigger political stage. But I think that there's also some hope that this pressure to kind of conform or present in a very particular way as an Asian American candidate, I hope it's going to fade in time. I know that, you know, we just recently spoke about Sheng Tao's historic win in Oakland. She is a candidate who ran partly on being unapologetically herself and unapologetically Asian American in all those complex ways. And so I do hope that that shows a new wave of expectations for Asian American politics to come.
Yeah. And Mayor Tao also is part of that new generation, right? I mean, she's in her 30s.
Absolutely.
You know, this new generation of Asian Americans in politics. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you, Vicky.
That is CAP Radio race and equity reporter Sarah Mises-Tan, who is also the host of the podcast Mid-Pacific, which explores Asian American identity in California. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicky Gonzalez.